Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
Thing we did, and that's really exciting because what happens is we've learned agricultural. Mm. You don't know how much what God is going to give. Right, how much fruit you're going to have.
Yep.
Every vintage it's different.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what the quality is going to be every year. So great wineries always, I'm going to say overproduce, but over budget for how much fruit they're going to get
mm-hmm.
versus how much fruit they need.
Yeah,
because a barrel could be strange, Merlot could be not good this year, Cabernet could be light, whoever, you don't know the reason.
Yeah.
But there's always leftover fruit.
Yes.
High quality leftover fruit.
Yes.
Go figure, wineries have extra wine for friends.
Oh.
And that is, we'll get a call, a winery say, we're going into production, we're going to bottle in 2 weeks. We did the final blending, we have 4 barrels left over. Would you be interested? So it's the same fruit that they're doing for their wine,
yeah.
but not the same blend necessarily.
Yeah.
Or it could be softer, or it could be more tannic, or you know. But it's the same exact source of fruit, and we bottle it. They bottle it for us under our label. Go figure. And it's lot number. We're on lot number 65 or 70 now, and they range from as cheap as $20 to as expensive as about 100. We promise them not to advertise who they are, who the winery is. Periodically, they make mistakes, where the because most of these wineries are not private label wineries.
Yeah.
Right? They just do their own label. So they go to do a bottling run, and they don't have any foil, except for their branded foil.
Oops.
Goes on the bottle. One time, they didn't have any boxes. So I see a pallet of wine coming in with a branded company's wine. I'm like, I didn't order 50 cases of Pinot Noir from that guy. They're like, look, the invoice, it's go figure. So they had no boxes, so they put it in their branded box. So even though we can't tell, sometimes people can guess. Grand finale is one barrel at a time. That's when we have a relationship with a winery and they have something special. We taste it and we're like, can we buy the whole barrel? And that co-brands. So it will say Grand Finale Turnbull Vineyards,
mm-hmm.
Grand Finale Barnett Vineyards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really people we have great relationships with that have an extra barrel that they're willing to sell, co-branding it so it's really high quality. That is usually, it's the same price as the winery's high-end wine. Where the go figure is usually like half price of what the winery would sell their wine for.
You're an absolute Jedi of opportunity. You seize it.
Now it's even more exciting than ever before, being home.
Yeah. So let's talk about Premier for just a minute. We have to, because you're such a prominent buyer. How did it all begin?
I think, and nobody knows for sure, I think it began with our name change.
Huh.
Because the year we didn't, the first year of Premier,
yeah.
we were Shoppers Discount Liquor.
Oh.
The second year, we were Gary's Wine and Marketplace. And I think somebody in the Napa Valley, the vintner's office said, oh, here's a store in New Jersey that's buying a lot of wine called Gary's Wine and Marketplace. We should invite him to Premier. I came to Premier the first year, had no idea.
Which year was that?
21 years ago, 22 years ago?
22 years ago.
I've come every year since the second year, so I missed the first year, came every year since. And I came with my business partner, the now retired lawyer, and I thought he was going to have a heart attack because we're buying wines that, you know, you're buying 20 cases. We bought Behringer, I think BV, we bought 2 or 3 lots the first year. And of course they were like retail pricing. Not like it is now. But it's still, you write a check for $20,000 with no plan on selling the wine and not getting the wine for 2 years.
Yeah, how did that compute, especially,
It didn't, but again, I tasted the wines. I really liked the wines out of barrel. I thought they would be delicious. I thought that it would be opportunity.
Uh-huh.
In the 2 of the wines we bought, we paid less than retail.
Okay.
So I thought it was a value, you know, a value mm-hmm. proposition. Mm-hmm. But when we wrote the check immediately following, I was like, wow, that's weird. Now I have to wait 2 years.
Uh-huh.
But uh-huh. every time, you know, the next year we still hadn't sold any. So I bought, I think, one or two lots the second year.
Okay.
But by then they came in and we did a dinner. I think we did a Behringer dinner with Ed Sabrasia.
Oh, yes.
And the wine was spectacular. And yes. everybody that tasted it were like, oh, my God, Gary, this wine is better than the best of the best that
yeah.
they produce. So it propelled us. So then I started coming. And then I made it an event, right? I started coming earlier, bringing my wine buying team. Mm-hmm. So the real plan at that point became to go back to my roots and let's become an expert. Let's mm-hmm. Let's taste 200 wines to 300 wines mm-hmm. from a vintage every February.
Okay.
So that now, before the critics write about it, before competition, before sales, you know, mm-hmm. Our sales reps, they don't know anything until it comes in.
Yeah.
You know, critics may be tasting at the same time, but not writing about it yet. It takes them sometimes to get it written.
Yeah.
So we're getting the inside scoop. This, for me, the best thing the Premier Napa Valley did for me was get me to taste a lot of wine in a short period before anybody else. And help me become a greater expert and a more important player in my market. Mm-hmm. The buying for us was a secondary benefit. Then we started getting, you know, as we started selling some, people loved it. So we started getting a group together to pre-buy it because it didn't make economic sense. But
no.
If I have other people's money, makes so much easier to buy then, right?
That check writes itself then.
Right. So then that's how we progressed. So
okay.
we started getting a group of people. I would bring them, and we would taste the wines, and then I'd go buy the wine and divide it up amongst them.
Mm-hmm.
And it became more enjoyable for me because
sure.
I was not really laying out the money.
Yeah, it's just a little consortium.
Yeah, and a lot of people are doing that now, I believe so.
Yeah.
So, which is great. I mean, it makes it more competitive. But
yeah.
but I believe that my consumers, my guests, my friends get to drink great wines.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to help Napa Valley, which has been something I enjoy doing.
Absolutely.
It's it feels good.
Association,
you know.
Option, yeah.
And now, so what one of my good friends says is, I have the dream job, right? He says, Gary, you have it unbelievably well. You have it easy. I was like, why? Why do you say that? He says, you sell me the wine, full retail. Then you tell me this wine should age for 10 years. And then I invite you over to dinner 10 years later, and you drink my wine that you had me age for you. I'm like, perfect.
Yes.
I couldn't have scripted it better.
You have it all figured out.
That's really? An accident. That's the same. I didn't plan that, but that's another accidental benefit.
Speaking of accidents, you referenced earlier that the whole Dina De Luca space was another series of fortunate accidents.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So I've been following this location in particular
yeah.
since the first Premier Napa Valley.
Really?
I come here. And I said, we do wine and cheese.
Of course.
We do charcuterie.
Checking out competition.
Who did it better than Dean and DeLuca in the day?
Yeah, yeah.
So I would come here, I'm coffee is my thing. I drink 4 or 5 cups of coffee a day. So I would come here during my premier trips, and I would start off in the morning, go to Oakville Grocery, get a cup of coffee, scoot by in the afternoon, stop at Dean and DeLuca, get a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And I would taste the coffee. And then walking around, I would snoop. What wineries do they have? What's cool? What's new? What's exciting?
Yeah.
I'd go to the cheese department. I'd see what cheeses they have. I would take pictures. I would bring them back to my wine buying team and say, we got to get this. We got to get that. I would talk to my cheesemonger and say, have you tasted this cheese? So I've been following this store forever.
Interesting.
And I used to say, we're the Dean and DeLuca of New Jersey, but reverse. Because we sell much more wine and alcohol than they do.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're 90% beverage alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
They were 35% wine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big difference. So you reverse, and that's what we were.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward, last February I came here and I'm like, oh, oof, doesn't look so good.
Yeah.
And I started thinking, well, maybe whatever. You know, maybe they were getting ready to do inventory. Maybe they were selling. Maybe they were renovating. Who knows? I came back in May and it looked like it was out of business.
Yeah.
And so my son, who's doing his MBA, I said, could you look into Dean & DeLuca? And he came back to me and said, they're failing miserably.
Wow.
So we got a lead on the landlord, obviously, who I knew was Rudd.
Right.
And they said, we can't really talk to you as long as Dean & DeLuca pays rent.
Yeah.
When they stopped paying rent, we talked. And it was the advantage of having a lawyer that's a partner is we were able to sign a lease very quickly, put a lease together very quickly. After Dean & DeLuca left, we then quickly went to work to sign the lease.
How excited were you when you realized this is yours?
After I was in shock that we are coming to Napa. Yeah. So it's a dream come true that I didn't know I had. You know, you think about it, I never thought of buying a store in Napa. I have many times, and we've looked many times at buying a house. We've always thought that how cool would it be to have a little place in Napa that we could, a couple weeks here, a month there, as the kids get older, as we retire, maybe have a place. I could never pull the trigger because the economics never made sense.
Yeah.
Now, we need to buy a place because I'm going to be here a lot. And it's like every time I'm here, I'm coming home. You know, every time we walk down the street.
Yes.
Friendly faces who I may or may not know come up and say hello. You know, I went to Bouchon the other night for dinner with my son, and we just sort of sneak in, sit at the bar, have a glass of wine, have a couple appetizers for dinner, and sneak out.
Mm-hmm.
It was like I was running for mayor. My son said, Dad, you caused a turmoil. The poor waiters couldn't get, because everybody, I knew everybody.
Wow.
And there's nothing more gratifying. And everybody's thanking me for doing it. Because I think people were afraid two things. And I didn't think of either of those. I thought of the second one. One is it would be vacant for a long time.
Yeah.
Which is not good for the environment. Environment not holistically. Not good for the business community.
Yeah.
To have a big, beautiful, iconic space empty. And that was my goal, is not to allow that to happen.
Right.
The second part is to recreate something. And that's what I started thinking is I don't want to start create a new thing. I don't want people to come in here and see Gary's Discount Liquor.
Yeah.
Because that's not what it is. It's Gary's, which used to be Dean & DeLuca, which will feel like Dean & DeLuca, but much better than it ever was. And my commitment and goal is to hire the best people to provide great food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not ad hoc, not, you know, Farmstead.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be a great sandwich place, a great quick breakfast place, a great grab-and-go place, a great charcuterie and cheese board place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be able to support the wineries with their cheese programs and charcuterie programs. And if they want a quick sandwich or quick sandwiches for an event, we'll be able to do that. And provide good beverage alcohol.
We'll get to the alcohol part in a moment. There's a movie that's now pretty old that's called Fool's Russian. There's a great line, which is what I remember the movie for. You're everything I never knew I always wanted.
That's a true statement. My wife's best line from a movie is is it God Almighty, Bruce Almighty, God, something?
Bruce, something like that, Bruce, yeah, Bruce Almighty.
Bruce Almighty?
Yeah.
Behind every great man, there's a woman rolling her eyes.
That's wonderful, love it. So there you are. This is a culmination of sorts. And the fact that people reacting to you with such strong emotional force, that tells you everything you need to know. The community really embraced you, and this is not necessarily, this is a community that's very small. It's not necessarily all about welcoming new.
Right.
It's really a necessity. It's a deep-seated realization that there has to be that energy coming in order for the valley to maintain the vibrancy that we all look for. So on the winery side, you made so many friends over the years, my goodness. So as far as the inventory of this particular store, is it going to be Napa Valley heavy? He looks at me sheepishly like, I'm not sure I want to answer this yet.
No, I have an answer, which I believe is true.
Okay.
We're going to support our Napa Valley friends. Excellent. Absolutely.
Very good.
In two ways. One is we're going to sell their wines.
Yes.
Two is we're going to provide wine for them to drink.
Ah.
Right? So what happens is tourists coming up the valley, millions of them, they're here to buy Napa Valley wine. Mm-hmm. Our job is to help them buy Napa Valley wine.
Indeed.
Napa Valley vintners, workers, staff, winemakers, they taste a lot of Napa Valley Cabernet every day. They may want something else to experiment with. We will provide that service.
Very smart. As far as the business side of Napa Valley specifically, you've watched it now for 22 years very closely. What have you noticed in terms of, with respect to this particular valley, wine performance, relationship with consumer, trends, relationship with trade, most notably? Talk a little bit about that.
You know, it's a mixed bag, and I have to wear a few hats when I say this.
Right.
I think the quality of Napa Cabernet, Napa wines in general, is so much better than it ever was.
Mm-hmm.
Right? From even 5 years ago.
Exponential.
I think everybody has raised the bar. Everybody's playing to a higher level of quality. There is no question in my mind that 98% of Napa Valley producers are protective of the name Napa Valley. And they want to produce the quality of the wine that's indicative of quality Napa Valley.
I agree.
So that's number one, and that's great.
Important. Mm-hmm.
From a consumer side, the downside of that is the price points have gotten also exponentially higher. Mm-hmm. But they need to be higher to support the farming that the way they're doing and the use of labor in the barrel.
Absolutely.
So I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is always to make sure we're getting new people into Napa Valley wines.
Ah.
And you can't do that at $2.50 a bottle.
Right.
Necessarily.
Yes.
So that's one thought. The second thought is how great they're doing with hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
When I came in 1979 to 1990, maybe 2000, you go up to the wine room, you go up to the winery, you walk in, you wait your turn, you go to the bar, you taste a couple wines, you may pay, you may not pay. Some places didn't charge back then.
Okay.
And you leave.
Yeah.
Now there's lounges and VIP rooms and clubs. They've gotten uber sophisticated.
Yeah.
Which is great for the wineries. They're creating all the D2C, direct-to-consumer programs,
mm-hmm.
which is great for the wineries.
Mm-hmm.
Not great for retail.
No.
So this is the area that I have to balance mentally, right? So the more I do at Premier, the more I promote Napa Valley, the more the wineries do direct, the less I can get to sell. Having said that, as long as I get my share, I'm fine. Do you know what I mean? As long as I need the wineries to be thriving. I really do. I need them to be profitable. Because as long as they're profitable, they're going to continue to make great wine. When they become unprofitable or less profitable, they have to cut corners. If they cut corners, the quality goes down. So I've always been an advocate of high-quality Napa Valley wine. Now, more so than ever, I need to partner with them to make sure we're all on the same page and to make sure that the reputation of Napa Valley maintains as strong as it has ever been.
So you take the helicopter view, really, and you look at the overall good, that tide lifts all boats mentality?
You have to. You know, you have to look at it as, I need to make money.
Right.
How do I make money? a lot of different ways. But if my partners aren't making money, everybody, right, when I buy from a wholesaler, the wholesaler needs to make a living.
Yeah.
The winery, everybody needs to make a living. So if we can all figure out how to do this together, we'll all be in a better position. So helicopter approach would be a good description. Also, diversify.
Yeah.
You know, which means not, you know, I can't rely just on the Napa Valley tiny production producer. I need people that produce a little bit more.
Yeah.
Enough to go around.
Yeah.
And I need producers from Europe.
Yes. In terms of the diversification, but also there's a bit of a dilution going on, meaning that there's so many options. Whereas California, and specifically Napa Valley, cult like wines were in enormous demand. They still are, but not in the same way. And there's a lot more $100 cabs than they used to be. And the market has become so much more competitive, and the cost of production has gone up. And we have all this craft spirits, craft beers, populating that same space of drinkers that like alcohol of some type. What are your thoughts about how to navigate that and what it means to specifically fine wine?
That's another multiple faceted
like 10
question.
Questions in one. Good luck.
But I'll try to factor it out. So there's a couple issues. And you mentioned craft spirits.
Yeah.
You mentioned craft beer.
Yep.
You didn't mention cannabis.
Oh my. I'm like scared to even go that direction. Because it's such a separate category.
But it is. So yeah. Now the what I'm going to call the traditional Napa Valley Cabernet buyer is changing. The palate, everybody's palate is changing, right? And also the critics, the reviewing world has changed.
Very much so.
So it used to be very heavily driven by Wine Spectator and Advocate with Robert Parker. Mm-hmm. Now, I think it's more diverse than ever.
And citizen also, reviewers, yeah.
And I'm going to also call it more crowdfunding. You know, a lot of Vivino-type apps out there where people are looking at what other people that have tasted the wine, not critics, have said. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of things in play. And the challenge of the wineries, and this is where I think we are in a good position, both in New Jersey and in South St. Helena. So where everybody needs partners, right? They as allocated as you were yesterday, as limited production as you are, you need somebody to be an advocate for your brand.
Yes.
The consumer that used to go to 5 or 6 tastings a day now can only do 2 or 3 at most.
Yep.
Because it's an experience. They've done a great, it's on couches, lounge chairs. You sit there and you have your cheese board and it slows down the process. Right. It's more civilized, but you can't taste as many.
Yeah.
Well, if a guest doesn't have time to go up to Barnett in the top of Spring Mountain and Schaefer in Stag's Leap District, well, they can taste both at Gary's Wine and Marketplace.
Oh, and isn't that great? That's great.
That's one of our goals is you want your special experience of just hanging out with Doug Schaefer and tasting his fantastic wines, then you go to Schaefer and you do your private tasting. Mm-hmm. You want to see the most beautiful place, I think, in the world, or one of the most beautiful places, Barnett.
That view.
The view is spectacular. How many people did I just offend by saying that's one of the most beautiful places? Did I offend potential winers?
I don't think so. It's
well, cut it out if really I've offended anybody.
I'm going to take it upon myself because I've seen that view many times from the cave, and it's the best in the world.
But if you get there, you're only going to one place.
Yes.
So if you can't get there, but if we're tasting Barnett, we're going to introduce you to that story. We're not just tasting wine here. We're going to introduce people to the story.
Yeah.
And so we're going to help wineries tell the story. And we're going to be partners with them in doing that. Because that's how I grew up. I grew up in love with the people of Napa Valley before the wine of Napa Valley.
Yeah.
And we're going to just continue that. So the challenge for the wineries in my world, maybe the benefit of Gary's South St. Helena is we'll be able to work together and offer many more options for the consumer, for the guest, than one specific winery tour for tasting.
Very smart. Speaking of consumers, let's talk about demographics for a second. That's changing as well. That landscape is modifying as we speak. I just read recently that while everyone is on the chase of millennials, Gen X's are really the buying power.
I read the same article.
Good one. So what are your perspectives on this?
I think we need to be cognizant of all consumers.
Okay.
My group, we're drinking probably a little less, but we've also been buying forever.
Yep.
So my group is past its prime in purchasing, absolutely. Yeah. The millennials are the largest group. Mm-hmm. But A, they're not there yet economically. Mm-hmm. B, there's this other group in the middle that's now got some buying power. So I think we need to speak, first of, we need to speak to everybody. Yeah. Because you never know, right? You never know when a 25-year-old is going to switch to great wine. An example, a now retired football player. Our Madison store is right in less than a mile away from the Jets training facility. Mm-hmm. And a young, rather large gentleman came in one day in love with Napa Valley wine. He had gone to a tasting with another football buddy and tasted Napa wine, and at 25 or 26, he fell in love with Napa wine. A, he had the wherewithal economically. B, he had tasted it. If I had assumed because of his sheer size that he was a beer drinker, I would have missed out on the opportunity of selling him some Napa Valley wine. So I guess my point is that we need to speak to everybody. And try to speak to them in a language they understand, which is the bigger challenge.
How do you go about it? You walked into this question. How do you communicate effectively and succinctly with those consumers?
Biggest challenge ever, right? So it's easier when they get into the door, you know, because we'll have options, whether it's tasting, whether it's our wine team's tasting notes, whether it's critical tasting notes, you know, critics. Mm-hmm. It's do we speak to them on Facebook, which is passé, Instagram, you know, so we're experimenting with all the wineries. I could see the wineries are doing the same thing.
Absolutely. So
you've got to look and you've got to speak to people where they're heard, right? When I first started the wine store, the liquor store, actually it was, we advertised in our local newspaper. Full-page ads during the holidays, right? Mm-hmm. We would do local papers. We would do the Daily Rag, you know, the local, what is it called? The, doesn't matter. In Madison, it was the Madison Eagle.
And local, it was the local paper.
It was as local
kind of like Depot Register.
It was every Thursday, and we would advertise in there. We haven't advertised really in a newspaper in years.
Yeah.
Now we play with cable a little bit, but we do social media.
I think social media is an important tool.
Absolutely.
Awareness.
So I don't understand how to advertise, but we do it. You know, we have a team of people, small team, but we have people that help us understand where to advertise to make sure we're speaking to the next generation.
Absolutely. And I think your story is very compelling, actually, because it's an American dream story.
Thank you.
Real quick on the producer side, let's say there's a small producer in Napa Valley that, and God knows they need help. If for another reason, there's 660 registered and bonded wineries in a very small valley, and way more beyond that. So they want to get your attention. They're making a few hundred cases of wine. They're passionate. They have great fruit sources. How do they get in the store? What can they do to get your approval?
Haven't gotten there yet, but I've thought a lot about it.
Yeah.
So, this is not like I started. I'm not going to be the one buying and selling every wine.
Yeah.
So we're hiring a wine director.
Yeah.
hopefully within the next couple of days.
Yeah.
The wine director is going to have a team to start with, 3 or 4 or 5 people. So we're going to have we're putting a lot of cart before the horses.
Yep.
We're going to front load a great team.
Yeah.
And we're going to have, tasting. So, and I think the geeky people that I've talked to, like Brooke, who works for me in New Jersey, the Somm people, want to do blind tastings.
Okay.
So what we'll probably do is say, okay, you want your wine, we'll put it in a brown paper bag, we'll put the price on it, so at some point we know the price. We'll taste 10 wines of this category or whatever, and then the best people will win. Second part of that is partnerships.
Okay. Yeah, you've brought it up several times. That's a great
It's about
mentality.
Working together. So it's not just about me buying your wine or you selling me wine.
Yeah.
It's about us creating experiences together.
And cross-promoting.
So, cross-promoting. And it could be somebody comes to Gary's South St. Helena.
Yeah. I love how that sounds.
It sounds good. I think we're going to call it Gary's Napa. We're still working on that. We're going to try to separate the name a little bit, mm-hmm. so that people understand, because the product mix will be different.
Of course.
Selling it from California versus New Jersey, so there's definitely mm-hmm. some legal differences. So we're probably, it's Gary's Wine and Marketplace, but we'll create a website called GarysNapa.com, and we'll create a local feel for the store. But somebody comes here and tastes the wine. From the tasting machine or from the Coravin, mm-hmm. and the guest will say, "Oh my God, this is great." Our wine team will be trained to say, "Would you like to go visit the winery for our partners?"
Concierge service.
Concierge, which we're talking about. Set up the appointment, send them to the winery. Our goal would be for the winery to say to somebody, "Oh, if you want, Gary's carries a full line of our wines. You can get them there. Or if you want to taste a full range of Napa wines, go to Gary's. Or the cheese you're eating came from Gary's Wine and Marketplace." So our dream come true mm-hmm. is to have a synergy and a relationship that's truly a partnership, a give and take.
Win-win.
It has to be. It can't be, we just go to wineries and demand wine. First of all, that doesn't feel good. Two is it's one side and becomes limited, right? Especially for the wineries that can sell out everything they always produce. Yeah. That doesn't accomplish anything. For the smaller people, just to demand doesn't accomplish. It's about what feels good. And some small wineries may never do wine and cheese tastings. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll come and meet people here. If they don't have a real tasting room, everybody's trying to jockey to get tasting space in Yountville in St. Helena or downtown Napa.
Yeah.
But it's expensive.
Yes, and you have to staff it.
Maybe we're their staff. And we help them sell their wines.
That sounds like a pretty sound business model to me.
Options are endless.
Well, obviously a lot to do, and I'm pretty sure you're the man to do it. I'm going to get a little personal for a minute. You taste so much wine on the daily basis, most likely. And you also socialize with people that buy those premier wines and probably lots of other things. So you had to have some moments of epiphany. I doubt it's just one. But has there been any highlights throughout your wine consuming career that you'd like to share?
I have a few. I was at a Burgundy tasting.
Oh my.
And we were tasting some ridiculous, and there's nothing better than great Burgundy. And except for great Napa Cab, of course.
Of course. And but, I was about to say that. But
after the tasting, we were at a kitchen in a New Jersey wholesaler mm-hmm. In their warehouse. So they put a kitchen in. It was a beautiful setup. Mm-hmm. At the end of the Burgundy tasting, the owner said, "Does anybody want to taste anything for dessert?" I said, "An old port would be nice." Because I'm a brash guy. Mm-hmm. So why not? He brought out a Grom 1963. And this was probably 1995 or 98, something. The wine was just, I remember that. I don't remember the specific names of all the Burgundy we tasted that night. Mm-hmm. But that Grand Cru 63 port was just heavenly. So that's one. The second, which is more personal, and I'm staying away from Napa for a moment, is my daughter, my wife's daughter also, mm-hmm. was born in 1990.
Good year.
And we had bought the store in 87, so in 90 we had no money.
Yeah.
But 88 was a great Bordeaux vintage, 89 was a great Bordeaux vintage, 90 was a great Bordeaux vintage. Mm-hmm. And I was the only wine shop around that really understood how to sell wine. So a wholesaler said, we have a lot of 88, 89, 90. We'll sell them to you at a good price if you take all at once mm-hmm. a pile. Mm-hmm. So I said, yeah. So we literally piled up the store with 88, 89, 90. And so our daughter was born in 1990. So I said, let me take some home. So I took home two cases of Montrose 1990. $18.25 a bottle
it
cost.
I so don't want to hear that.
And a case of Latour.
Oh, my Lord.
That was expensive. It was like $45 a bottle it cost me. Mm-hmm. Daughter gets married 3 years ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I bring the 90 Montrose as one of the wines to her wedding. Mm-hmm. So we had Magnum and 90 Schaefer Hillside Select, which was fantastic.
I bet.
3 liter of Veuve Clicquot Le Grand Dame Rosé 90 mm-hmm. Magnum.
Wow.
Fantastic. And I had a wine list, so we had all Napa cabs. Was the $100 to $150 range was the house wine.
Right.
I only have one daughter. And they didn't let me do anything else at the wedding. I had no other say. All my friends kept coming up to me, this 90 Montrose is the best.
Singing, huh?
You must have spent a fortune for the wedding. It was the cheapest wine we served at the wedding by far. And it was, so the fact that I was able to, at the time, think to save some of it, mm-hmm. and the fact that we were able to share it at one of the happiest days of my life was really cool. So. Those would be two of my experiences, trying to stay away from my Napa wine experiences.
Something tells me that you're constantly researching, evolving. You have a very active mind that you're constantly absorbing information. How does that fit into the bigger picture of what you do professionally, your personality?
Wow. So, not to get too personal, but I grew up with learning issues, right? So okay. Dyslexic, you know, a lot of, so I'm a very visual person.
Okay.
So my wife always knows when I'm in renovation mode or I'm in new store mode because I want to go shopping. Mm-hmm. And like we'll go to, whether it's a grocery store or Nordstrom's, mm-hmm. and I'm like, she's like, you're thinking of buying a store, aren't you? Because I'm looking at the lights, I'm looking at the floor. So a lot of my research and thinking is just by engaging, you know, and looking around. We'll go to pay, and I'll be walking behind the register to see how the register system works. She says, you know, that's a little creepy. I'm like, no, I'm just trying to learn. You know, it's really about learning. So it's you know, listening to people. You know, going to dinner and hearing how people order, what do they order, how the servers interact. You know, so for me, it's a constant evolution of the world we're in. It's not necessarily, I'm not planning it. I've never planned. I'm still not planning. I just do.
Still not planning, I just do. That could be a headline.
It could be, you know, and hopefully I do well on this. But it's good. I spoke to a MBA program at a local college, and they gave me a list of things I needed to address. Mm-hmm. And one of them was the business plan.
Yeah.
And it was a simple business plan. Sell more than you buy. Still doing that. a little more sophisticated, but still really just, you know, trying to do it in a way that feels good.
Well, that's a beautiful note to end this conversation, and I'm hoping for it to be continued because there's much more I want to ask now. I'm so thankful for your bright and endless curiosity, for your positive attitude, which just absolutely brightens up every space, that smile that I'm looking
at.
I really want to personally welcome you to Napa community, which I've come to love with a great deal of passion. I think you will bring that energy that we referenced early in the conversation, and those partnerships that you so beautifully described as so necessary, but also that feel-good factor.
Yeah.
I love that.
We're coming to the most exciting time.
Yes, harvest.
I mean, it's harvest. We're opening our store during harvest. We're welcoming a grandchild during harvest.
Oh, my God.
My daughter, the 1990 daughter, is having a baby in November.
Wow,
so I keep saying, if the store's late and she's early,
yeah,
I'm in big trouble. But it's just, I every night I go to bed saying to my wife, thank you. I'm the luckiest man in the world. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I couldn't be happier.
One of the most attractive things to me in the wine business is that it teaches you humility, regardless of which side you're on.
Yeah.
That you're not in control. And you have that quality in
space.
Thank
you so
much.
It means a lot.
I thank you very much for sitting out
with
me. And we will definitely be talking again.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure featuring Ilona Thompson. We'll see you again next week.